This is a Defocus Media production.
Welcome to Vision Tech, the technology podcast dedicated to keeping you on top of the latest developments in eye care technology and discussing how they will impact your career and help you provide the best possible care to your patients. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Vision Tech. This episode is a very special one for two reasons. One, it's our season finale, which marks 6 months since we started this podcast. Starting this podcast was a dream come true for me, and it's been really great to be able to share that journey with all my friends and colleagues. I would like to thank Dr. Daryl Glover and Dr. Jennifer Lyerly for giving me this amazing opportunity to share my passion about eye care technology and for supporting me along the way. I would also like to thank all of my wonderful guests who have joined me during the season to discuss some of the most important and thought-provoking topics in eye care technology. Thank you so much for contributing your thoughts and knowledge. Without you, this podcast would not have been possible. And last but certainly not least, I would like to thank all of our wonderful listeners who have tuned in to follow us along this journey and who have offered their support, encouragement, and suggestions for how to make the podcast better. The second reason why I feel this episode is special is because it discusses one of the most exciting and rapidly changing areas in eye care, and that is low vision. Joining me for this discussion on low vision is my good friend, Dr. Brian Walensky. Dr. Walensky is a world-renowned lecturer on low vision, and he operates a successful low vision practice in New York City. He has also been a consultant and advisor on low vision to national associations as well as many industry companies.
Without any further ado, let's jump into the podcast.
So, Dr. Walensky, can you tell us a little bit more about how you became interested in low vision optometry and also what type of practice setting you practice in?
Sure. For the first 9 to 10 years of my career, I practiced mostly in a family eye care optometric opticianry practice in New York City. It's a practice that my father started back in the 1980s here on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. I practiced for 9 years. I guess I think I got a little burned out of doing just primary care and routine eye care, after which I said I needed a change, and then got myself involved in, sort of just by searching myself and what I wanted to move forward in my career with, and I got involved with low vision. And from there on in, I've been working and practicing low vision and continuing doing primary eye care the past 8 years.
That's fascinating. And we really like to take the approach of looking at different specialties within eye care through the lens of technology and how technology impacts the care that we deliver. And I was curious to learn from you what role you think a technology plays in low vision rehabilitation compared to other optometric specialties as far as how much you rely on technology and different devices.
Sure. Well, I see we're all coming to rely on technology in general just for diagnosing, for managing eye disease and seeing and caring for our patients in everyday practice. But not only that, you know, the biggest technology we had in the field of low vision in the past was CCTVs or a handheld electronic magnifier. And really now we're seeing more technology coming forward, things such as artificial intelligence, such as computer vision, and things such as machine learning. And it's very fascinating. Now, we're seeing that coming into low vision, and we're not really, I would say, depending on it, but it gives us another option and solution to help a patient achieve their goals. Whereas in maybe diagnosing and in everyday optometry practicing, we're really depending on more the technology much more. Whereas I don't really see it as a dependence or something we have to do in low vision. I think it just enhances the way we're practicing and what we're able to offer our low vision patients. I also see in the future, as you know, we get older, as my generation gets older, you know, as we all know the statistics, that we're definitely going to see much more visual impairment. You see 50% more people by the year 2050 with macular degeneration. Individuals are not only going to want technology, they're going to demand it. People in my generation, people who are getting older, people who are used to using technology now every day. So that's, I think, we're going to see the bigger difference in the future.
And with all these different advances and changes, how do you manage to stay on top of the latest technologies that are applicable to low vision?
Well, one is you know, keeping an ear out from our colleagues, hearing what's out there, reading and staying on top of journals, just maintaining and being on social media. I mean, ODs on Facebook has been a great outlet just of people talking about new things and hearing new things and staying abreast just of what everybody else is doing. You know, in the past, before we had that, really, you were kind of alone in your own office and didn't know what was out there other than the journals. It's a great outlet to find out things that way. But another great way is really attending the conferences that are out there. And not just the optometry conferences, but getting out into the disability world and seeing what else is out there, not just from the optometry context of it, but the special education teachers, the school nurses, counselors, rehabilitation specialists, low vision rehabilitation specialists, that is, they have their own conferences, and really getting to those places is where I really get a good firsthand knowledge of what is out there and what's to come. We see in the field of disabilities itself, companies investing a lot of time and energy and putting a lot of technology into things. So things even such as like the Consumer Electronics Show out in Vegas each year has a lot of new technologies coming out for people with vision loss or blindness and even other disabilities.
That's a really great point that you bring up. The first time I was exposed to low vision was actually at optometry's meeting when I was first or second year student. And that was before we really learned about low vision in our traditional curriculum, but it was really cool to see what technologies were being discussed and what training techniques were being discussed, and also seeing in the exhibit hall some of the different things that I just heard about in lecture. So it seems to me that conferences could be a really good opportunity to increase your knowledge base, but then also get a one-on-one time actually interacting with the different technology that's out there. And recently you were at the CSUN conference. That is a really important conference in the field of low vision rehabilitation. So would you mind taking a few minutes to kind of educate us about that particular conference and what your experience was this year?
Sure. For the past few years, I've been attending what's known as the CSUN conference out in San Diego, California, and it's a great conference. I call it the CES of Disabilities Conference, where really you're seeing the forefront of whatever is going on in the field of disabilities and rehabilitation. And a lot of companies who are creating things for visual impairment and blindness are there attending this conference. CSUN stands for California State University Northridge, and they have a rehabilitation program for their students. And they've been putting on this program. I believe this was the 33rd conference that they've put on for disabilities.
And what does this conference offer to clinicians and patients with low vision?
Sure. So the CSUN conference has showcasing rehabilitation products, and not just products like we're talking about for visual impairment or blindness, but also for other disabilities. So we're seeing things such as different ways to access computer programs, our accessibility to things, different wheelchairs and new technologies when it comes to mobility for that. When it comes to visual impairment at these conferences, what we've been seeing more and more is a lot of wearable technologies. And that's been the forefront of things that is coming out.
So it seems to me as an eye care provider that it's a great opportunity not only to learn about the actual technology, but to learn about where you interface with the other providers, such as occupational therapy, and to learn how you can make those referrals, you know, what their capabilities are, because I can see that optometry or ophthalmology could be the first point where a person who's developing low vision gets diagnosed and or the first provider to really interface with them and be able to kind of usher them into the low vision rehabilitation process. What opportunities would there be for a clinician kind of in those areas?
I think a clinician going to a conference like this will end up meeting counselors for their local state rehabilitation centers, will be meeting policymakers, will be meeting teachers in the field who are teaching children with visual impairment or blindness, and really understanding where they can refer their patients, and also letting know these individuals, these people in the state rehabilitation centers, knowing that they're available if they do practice low vision or if they just want to even start practicing, become a referral source for your state to refer their patients or their students to you. They not only have technological needs such as accessing computers or accessing papers or other technologies, but they also still need optical aids that many optometrists are on the front lines of. So it's a great way to network with these individuals that you're available and you're out there, and also learning of where you need maybe if you're not practicing low vision or visual impairment, and if you have one of these conferences in your area, just to meet to know where your referral sources, know who's out there in your neighborhood, where to refer a visually impaired or blind person, so that way they can get best resources that they can get.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the technologies that you saw showcased at the conference this year, and what stood out to you as being the most valuable potentially, and what clinicians should keep an eye out for as far as integrating into their practice?
Sure. In the field of visual impairment, what we're seeing a lot of is improvements to a lot of the accessibility programs, things such as JAWS, which is Job Application with Speech, or Zoom Text. And these are just programs that allows someone who's blind or visually impaired to better use a computer. A lot of the screen readers, text-to-speech software, things like that. So a lot of the different computer programs and how to use them and how they're being improved is a good place to look at also and learn about. Another great big area that we're seeing popping up is just the expansion of wearables and wearable technology, or something I like to call wearable assistive technology, where basically it's items built sort of from the ground up, the visually impaired or blind user in mind, and not just maybe an app on the phone. So a lot of these things where you can wear something, it helps the individual and their hands free be able to do other things. Where a phone, you know, you constantly have it in your hands. A lot of people like the convenience of being hands free. So wearables is definitely a big player in this. And we're seeing a lot of wearables coming out with either being able to access information or working in a sort of a navigation type thing or even avoidance. So there's a few major companies coming out. There's a few of them that are working on sort of magnification, wearable type magnification that you wear. A few companies to mention from that is eSight, another one by New Eyes. There's another one by Iris Vision. And what these do is basically it's a wearable electronic magnifier, and it's magnifying things of anywhere up to anywhere, I think 12 to 13 times magnification. And different than a wearable bioptic or telescope, it's really able to give you more magnification. It's able to, you're able to change brightness and contrast, and you're also able to have a wider field of view rather than a diminished field of view, much like if you were looking through a telescope. So there's a lot of companies that are vying for people's attention in that field, basically wearable electronic magnification. Another exciting thing that was brought out in CSUN, which is, I have to state, a company that I consult for, so I do have to let that be known, is something called OrCam. OrCam just came out with their next generation device. And this is a little different than the other wearables that are coming out, which I mentioned that they magnify things. So it utilizes you need some vision in order to utilize this. Whereas OrCam is basically speaking the information to you. So it is utilizing computer vision, but then taking that information and then speaking the information to the person wearing it through a speaker next to their ear. So it's able to take a picture. It's a wearable device where it goes onto just an ordinary pair of eyeglasses, and it's about the size of a lipstick case or the size of your finger, and it weighs less than an ounce. It takes a photograph and then speaks back text by OCR, or optical character recognition. So as somebody can read their mail, somebody can read the menu in a restaurant, someone is able to read the newspaper and even scan to different articles. They also even have machine learning where it can learn different products. So it has product recognition and as well has facial recognition. I saw someone else showcasing something, but it was more of a concept, and I didn't really feel it was at the level of what the OrCam device is now. So not only do you get to see at CSUN some of the things that are out now, but see things that people possibly are working on or they're emerging technologies. So we'll have to see. But it was exciting to showcase and show people the OrCam 2.0, the second generation device. And again, as I said, many of the things there utilize people's vision. So it's nice that there's something out there that is not working with someone's vision, because that's something else too. You know, we buy high-tech devices sometimes and we use them, become obsolete, or they become unusable later on if, let's say, your vision gets worse, whereas something that's taking a photo and not depending on your vision, it's a useful device even if vision gets worse. It's nice that this technology, if your vision gets worse, it's still a useful item.
That's a really great recap. I actually am familiar with OrCam because I myself used to consult for them in the earlier days. It's actually where you and I originally met. And at that point, it was their Generation 1 device that I was familiar with. So it's great to learn a little bit more of what they've been working on since then. And it seems like smaller form factor and additional smart features that are in that device. Can you tell us a little bit more about how these smart or camera-enabled systems differ from the traditional optics systems that we've all learned about in optometry school?
Traditionally, what we have to work with, or we learn it in school, is optical aids. So in our traditional optics, things such as a telescope, or a bioptic, or just a handheld magnifier, or just using high power plus lenses such as microscopes. These things, I believe, are still going to be useful. I don't think technology is really going to take over traditional optical aids. I think optical aids are still going to be needed and are still going to be handy. I think what we have is technology is going to come in and just give us more options, give people more solutions. The difference that a smart camera or computer vision can do versus, let's say, you know, our traditional optical aids is that it can control brightness. We can control for contrast. We can control for other things such as even expanding on magnification, certain size text, being able to quickly go from something far to near or near to far and focus on it right away. So I think this is where it's going to open up more solutions and more options for our visually impaired patients versus traditional aids.
So from my understanding of low vision rehabilitation aids is there's not really a silver bullet out there as far as one device that can really assist the patient in doing all tasks. Do you see some of these newer devices as helping reduce the number of assistive technology that a single patient would have to get through the different activities through the day? Or do you feel like they'll still have about the same number of devices that they need to keep track of, but with extended functionality?
It's a very good question. So one thing I don't like is I don't like when these new technology companies do come out and they say, we are the one solution. We are the solution for it all. It's going to get rid of all your other items. And yes, keeping track of all these different devices can be difficult. From working in low vision, I've not only had visually impaired patients or even some blind patients that I've worked with, but some of these patients have become my friends and I've gotten to really spend time with them. And I've gotten to learn in that respect of all the different devices that my friends carry around, all the different needs that they have. And you know, what I find is, I think the more technology that comes around, the more things we're carrying around. It's just like you and me. You know, I'm carrying my phone. Now I need the extra battery. And now I want, you know, the phone was thought that they were going to take over from the digital cameras. And what are people doing? They're actually going back to the regular digital camera, more for an artistic level, but wanting it just for that and not just their phone. So I think you're still going to have multiple devices, but with more functionality. That's really what I think. I think an ultimate goal of a lot of these companies, I mean, definitely I could speak on the OrCam device, how it has multiple, or I call it a multifunctional device, which is great in a portable way. Being able to bring it anywhere with you is wonderful, but it may not take over totally for some other needs. I still think you'll have maybe multiple devices. It could might increase that amount, but I don't know if it'll take over. We'll have to see how the future of that goes.
You touched on portability, which seems to be something that some of these wearable technologies are better suited for than, let's say, the CCTV technologies that we're used to having in our practices. Do you see a shift there to moving towards portable and a lesser emphasis on some of the technologies that are less portable, or do you feel like there's really a place for both going forward?
I think there's a place for both right now. I think the future is definitely portability. I think also the future is making things look as inconspicuous as possible. One woman I met over the years, and somebody who's actually an OrCam user and then actually became an OrCam trainer and working with the company, she has ocular albinism. And she is using the device successfully, using other devices, using a magnifier successfully. She wears high plus lenses, able to be successful at her job. But when we introduced her, another optometrist actually I know up in Canada introduced her to a bioptic. She put it on. She couldn't believe how well the bioptic worked for her. Awesome bioptic. She put it on. She was able to utilize it to see distance. It's actually from a company called Ocutech. It's a great product that I use a lot with my patients. But when we asked her, if you were introduced to this, you know, she even said it too. But if you were introduced to this 20 years ago when you were a teenager in school, would you wear it? She goes, you know what? This would definitely have worked for me in school and it would have been a great aid for me because there were none of these wearable technologies out there. But she goes, I wouldn't wear this around my friends or my peers or the other students. And that's exactly it. Things need to be made sleek design. It needs to be made very inconspicuous, very lightweight, like it's not there at all. I think that's really the future.
Yeah, that's very important as well. You know, really in eye care, we're at this unique position of prescribing devices that not only enable people's functionality, but they're really visible and things that are wearable on their face, which is one of the most visible parts of our body. So even just going to regular prescription glasses, for example, we do have to give that additional consideration that whatever we prescribe is going to be something that has some social effects and potentially self-esteem effects on the patient when they're using them.
Oh, correct. And that's it with any of our patients. It's really about not does this device fit that person or does it really have to look at the person's functional needs, just as you hit touched on, their needs and wants. And that's what it's about. Visual impairment, losing sight, blindness is a very complex issue for the individual going through that. And really, it's meeting their individual needs. It's customizing it to them. So it's finding the right device, the right technology, the right fit for that individual. And yes, not making someone feel as if they're different.
And I can also see that potentially some devices would not have as large of a constraint in that area. For example, if you're prescribing a CCTV, the large screen for the patient to use for personal grooming, for example, you know, that could be something that's in their home, so it doesn't necessarily need to be portable and doesn't necessarily have some of the same constraints as some of the other devices. So I think it's probably important to be aware of what device has what kind of needs versus another.
Definitely. And we might, there's technologies to come out there that might even take that over. You mentioned things of the future and what's to come. I think things like Alexa and the smart home devices that we see are going to continue to grow. And these individual things are going to really be a help, not only to blind and visually impaired individuals, but also to people of all disabilities. And I think that's important to know also, is that we can't just think of our patients as having low vision or visual impairment. Patients are coming in that have other issues and other problems, and it comes along with other disabilities. And the smart home devices that are going to come out, or the age of the smart home, is just in its infancy now and is, I think, really going to be a help in the future.
That's a really great point. I can also think of technologies that are outside of the smart home, like driverless cars, self-driving cars, and delivery services, things that we're just seeing coming online now and really expanding the range of functionality for persons with low vision. What are some emerging technologies outside of the eye care sphere that you feel would be applicable for clinicians to know and share with their low vision patients?
No, exactly. Even here in New York City, so Accessoride is the service that people with disabilities use. So one of the issues and one of the problems is for someone who's visually impaired is that they're calling up the Accessoride service. They're having to make a reservation within 24 hours. Either they might get late or they might get pulled in with somebody else, or mistakes happen when something is entered. Also, the ride is not getting there on their terms, meaning they have no in advance. Sometimes I don't know in advance. I might have a friend call me up, meet me here in 2 hours. Oh, I want to be there. Well, Accessoride, that's not going to happen because they already have to have a reservation for that. So with Uber and Via or whatever is in your city is coming, the Accessoride company here is now actually making partnerships. One in particular is called Curb with the taxi companies, where they can now have on-demand pickup. And it's really giving a lot of freedom and independence to some friends of mine who are using it.
And I can really imagine that an eye care provider that really takes the time and keeps up with some of these types of things could really open a lot of doors for patients who may not be able to stay up to date with some of these things as they could be. So is that something that you share with your patients?
It definitely is. And I try to on even a local aspect, as well as what's happening here with either insurance coverage or things like that. We should be on top of that. But in general, I think all optometrists should know what services are available for their patients in their respective states or cities. I really feel every optometrist should have sort of what I call a basic low vision kit. And that kit might not even be a product. Kit could be just a list of places where somebody can go, or a list of services. Or it could be product. If it is product, it could be just some of these handheld magnifiers or some small optical aids, just to at least have something there, some basic knowledge of how to maybe show the patients, open the door for them to what other possibilities there are for them, and giving them options and giving them more freedom. So I think a good knowledge of what services are available, and possibly that basic kit, like I say, which could just be knowledge, or it could be product, or it could be devices, is just so important for us to know.
What are your thoughts on the future innovations in low vision? Do you feel like we're more likely to see innovations from the traditional optics devices, some of the smart camera devices that adjust contrast and magnification, or some of the artificial intelligence systems? What do you think we're expecting to see from those three different areas?
Sure. I think we're going to see in all three. Just alone in optics and optical, we're seeing new types of bioptics coming out, easier fitting bioptics. Like I mentioned, I work with one from Ocutech. Dr. Henry Green is an awesome guy and really came up with an easy way way to fit a bioptic. And not only that, other things such as our magnifiers, just by placing it on a mat, you know, it could recharge and charge the battery in there rather than having to plug in a device. So that in that respect also, in the traditional optical magnifiers, in some of the computer vision stuff, definitely we're going to see just enhancements based on how much megapixels that we can use, how much artificial intelligence is going to be there, and just all around, we're going to see advancements in all of those.
What are some key takeaways that you think our listeners should keep in mind when it comes to the role of technology in low vision rehabilitation?
Be open to technology. Understand that it's each individual is an individual and has their own individual needs and goals. And really, it's about that person's functionality and not just a number on a chart. And it's about quality of life and giving them independence. So be open to any technology and never, sort of like how when I first learned about daily contact lenses, one a day contact lenses, you know, oh, they're too expensive. The patient's not going to want them, that kind of thinking. So why offer it? Well, you never know what somebody is going to want or find out what they actually need and help them function. And I never assume that someone's not going to want a one day contact lens. Just like don't assume someone is not going to want or be able to use a piece of technology. I read a study somewhere where it said physicians are actually very poor predictors of rehabilitation outcomes of using certain technologies with their patients with poor cognitive ability. So even in that case, when you feel like someone doesn't have, maybe they have a little mild dementia or poor cognitive ability, don't discount them using some technology and being able to benefit from it. So I think it's just being open and knowing what's out there.
And Dr. Walensky, are there any projects or conferences that you'll be participating in the near future that our listeners can keep an eye out for?
So I have definitely, I would mention the CSUN conference is March 2019. And I do speak at that conference. I speak for OrCam at that conference. But that the next year it's going to be held not in San Diego, it's going to be held in Anaheim. So I do recommend that one. Upcoming ones where I will be speaking, there are actually two. I'm very excited to go to it. I'm actually speaking in front of a group of ophthalmologists for the two different conferences. It's basically an international group of eye hospitals that are bringing together ophthalmologists from eye hospitals all over the world. One will be in Kellogg Eye Hospital in Michigan in June, as when speaking on the topic of technology, specifically as it pertains to computer vision and what the OrCam device does. And then the other one, which I'm very excited about, is going to be at the end of next month in São Paulo, Brazil.
That's fantastic. And what are some of the ways our listeners can get in touch with you online, either through social media or any other ways?
I'm on ODs on Facebook. You can contact me on there. Feel free, as well as email. It's drbrianeyes@gmail.com. So I have a couple of friends named Brian. And unfortunately, my nickname fell to Brian Eyes. I always tried to stay away from it, but you know what? I've accepted it. So drbrianeyes@gmail.com it is.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Walensky. We definitely covered a lot and gained some key insights from you. So really appreciate your time. And we'll look to have you back on another Low Vision update sometime soon. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode, everyone. Don't forget to subscribe to the Defocus Media channel on the Apple Podcasts app, or online at defocusmedia.com to get the latest episodes of Vision Tech.